Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and we're back with another episode. I have obtained a sickness. I have no idea how, so we're going to try and power through that to get through this episode. Hopefully, the other one I record this week isn't as bad, but we will be recapping all the action at UFC 310. We went 10-4 on picks. Not too bad. Not too bad. We did predict the main event wrong, but I should have seen it coming. I actually did see it coming. I was rooting for the underdog. So we will be recapping all the action from UFC 310. Also on the docket, looking at week 14 of the NFL season, seeing where the standings are at currently for the NFL. We also have a review of the hit TV series Dexter. I finally finished it, so I'm going to be giving my series review. Also, the movie Eyes Wide Shut, Stanley Kubrick's final film before he passed away. I will be dropping my official movie review. Also, top 10 new things in pop culture, new UFC fights. We got a lot of fun stuff for you today. I am officially done with all of my in-person activities for my first semester of my final year at college. It's pretty crazy. It flies by. I tell you, they tell you college flies by, they tell you everything flies by, if that ain't the truth. I'm kind of hoping this podcast flies by just for me, but for the viewers, I hope you enjoy your time and listen to what I say, and maybe you'll take something away. Maybe something will surprise you, including some new matchups that the UFC has dropped recently. We've had a number of big ones. First off, the UFC 311 official co-main event and main event have been released. The co-main event for UFC 312 going down in Sydney, Australia, February 8th, the women's strawweight matchup between Zhang Weili and Tatiana Suarez. Zhang Weili, the defending, reigning champion, takes on the undefeated 10-0 number one contender, Tatiana Suarez. She was actually linked to a fight with Virna Jandiroba. That fight fell apart, and they were like, wait a second. Why is she fighting Virna Jandiroba? She has already earned a championship fight. So she'll take on Zhang Magnum Weili, Wei Zhang Weili, Weili Zhang. They always change the order of her name, I swear. But Zhang Weili, she's in her third title defense of this reign currently, because she beat Carla Esparza, defended against Amanda Lemos, defended against Yan Xiaonan. So yes, this will be her third title defense, and she'll probably win. But Tatiana Suarez has some excellent grappling. The striking has improved. This should be a fun co-main event going down in Australia. The main event, UFC 312 in Sydney, Australia, February 8th. The main event, the middleweight championship, Driscus du Plessis makes his second title defense against Sean Strickland. The rematch, a year in the making, a year in the making. I personally would have given it to Amzat Chimaev, but that's just me. Instead, Sean Strickland will get another opportunity. I think Driscus finishes him. Okay, I think Driscus is on another level compared to Sean Strickland. I think that first fight is going to... I honestly think we're going to get kind of what Islam Makhachev and Alexander Volkanovski was. That first fight is super close, goes down to the wire. Second fight, the champion runs right through him. Sean Strickland, I think his striking technique may be better than Driscus, but power, I'm going to Driscus. Takedowns, I'm going to Driscus. Give me DDP all day. The other matchups that have been recently announced, these for UFC London going down March 22nd in London, England. How about the number 9 ranked heavyweight? What is his name? Marcin Tybura. I can't believe his name's right in front of me and I forgot it. Marcin Tybura takes on the undefeated Englishman, Mick Parkin. And Mick actually was just booted into the rankings, actually. Yes, Mick Parkin is now ranked number 14. Wow, good for Mick Parkin. This will be a big step up for Mick Parkin. You know, you have to be a certain level to beat Marcin Tybura. Truly, I tell you, you have to be good. Derek Lewis has beaten him. Sergey Spivak. Curtis Blaydes has beaten him. Alexander Volkov has beaten him. Tom Aspinall has beaten him. And a lot of unranked guys can't beat him. So we'll see if Mick Parkin can get past him. He will have the home crowd of London behind his back. And another matchup. This one's not even the main event. Not even the main event. The number 4 ranked light heavyweight, Jan Blachowicz, back in action since 2023. Taking on the number 7th ranked Carlos Blackjag Ulberg. Carlos 7-1 in the UFC on a 7-fight winning streak. Got the biggest win of his career against Volkan Ozdemir in Macau, China. And now he gets a shot at the former champion, Jan Blachowicz. Jan, last time he fought, took Alex Barrett to a split decision. We know how good Jan Blachowicz is. I'll see how this one goes. Okay, I'm curious. I don't really want to drop a prediction yet because I know how good Jan Blachowicz is, and I just don't know if Carlos Ulberg can get over the hurdle that is Jan Blachowicz. When I think about the fight, the only real method of victory I could see was Carlos Ulberg by knockout, because I think in the grappling department, Jan has his number. But I'll be curious to see. Those are the four massive fights that I would say will mention. Other than that, nothing too insane. This kicking off of 2025 is going to be absolutely massive for the UFC. Got some big matchups coming at you. I'm excited to see what the future holds for the UFC. In terms of the pop culture world, we have lots of new news. Lots of fun news, too. Might I add, courtesy of Discussing Film, here are the top 10 new things in pop culture. What should we start with? Because a lot has been released. First off, the first trailer for 28 Years Later has been released. It is a sequel to 28 Days Later, which starred Cillian Murphy. This one stars Aaron Taylor-Johnson, who is taking over, might add. Aaron Taylor-Johnson getting so many movie roles. And it's a zombie film. It's a zombie film, and it actually looks pretty good. It looks kind of spooky. I can't lie. I don't really know how the zombies work in this movie. Honestly, so I'd have to learn the lore probably to see how this movie works. But it does look pretty good. I encourage you all to check it out. About a 2-minute trailer. It's very eerie, very ominous. Looks pretty good. Number two, Meet the Parents 4 is in the works. Robert De Niro, Ben Stiller, Terry Polo, and Blythe Danner are in talks to reprise their roles. Meet the Parents, I mean, you have, what's the original one? Meet the Fockers. Meet the Parents? It's Meet the Fockers. Then it's, Meet the Little Fockers or something. They're great movies. Honestly, Ben Stiller and Robert De Niro have amazing chemistry. Robert De Niro plays this kind of military-esque older dad of the family who doesn't like Ben Stiller, who's a more moderate character in the film. But it's good, really. It is very good trilogy, and now they're making a fourth one. I'm here for it. Number two, Johnny Cohn will be reprising his role as an Imperial warlord in The Mandalorian and Grogu. I keep forgetting that they are making a Mandalorian and Grogu film. It's going to be weird because we're so used to the format of them on Disney Plus. It's going to be weird to try and translate them to the big screen. I'll be interested to see if they can do it well. Number four, Anya Taylor-Joy says she is excited to begin filming Dune Messiah. I am so thrilled to be a part of it. I'm such a big fan of everybody that's a part of the project, and I just can't wait. If nobody knows, she actually plays, what is Timothy Chalamet's character? Paul Atreides, she plays his younger sister who's just been born, and it is going to be very interesting to see how they wrap up Dune Messiah, see how they can complete this trilogy, because Dune Part 2 was so good. I haven't rewatched it yet, because I just don't know if I want to rewatch it and ruin that first experience I had watching it, because I went with my boy Josh to the theater to watch it, and it was a spectacle of filmmaking. I mean, Denis Villeneuve, hands down, my favorite director of all time. That's just me personally. Number five, Benedict Cumberbatch confirms he is returning for Avengers Doomsday. He says, and I quote, "I'm really excited not only to work with the Russo brothers again, but to have Robert Downey Jr. returning as Dr. Doom. I think there's going to be some really cool developments ahead." Well, that's cool. That's cool. We're going to get Doctor Strange in Avengers Doomsday. I'm excited for Avengers Doomsday. Okay, and by the way, the MCU has not been doing too hot, all right? The projects here and there have been pretty good, but, I mean, overall, their stock is at an all-time low, and honestly, it's because they kind of took a step back from making movies, and I think movies is what made them special. All these Disney Plus shows, I haven't watched a single Disney Plus show, I think, since Moon Knight, so it's been like 3 years or something. Pretty ridiculous. Number six, Sony's Spider-Man villain spinoff universe is dead. Kraven the Hunter will be the final film in the SUMC universe for now. What's the Sony Ultimate Spider-Man universe? I don't even know what that is. But first off, a disaster. The Venom movies, all mediocre. All, you could say they're bad. They aren't really that good. They're very mediocre. You also have Morbius, which is regarded as one of the worst movies of all time, only to be topped by Madame Web, which is legit, I think, might be the worst movie of all time from all the rankings and ratings I've ever seen. But Kraven the Hunter has a chance to best them all. I mean, you get Russell Crowe, you get Aaron Taylor-Johnson. I'm very confident that Kraven the Hunter will be the best film in the Sony Spider-Man villain spinoff, whatever you want to call it. Number six, Robert Kirkman and Ryan Ottley will return to make a new Invincible comic series, Invincible Battle Beast, releasing in April 2025. I just want Invincible Season 3 and Season 4 and Season 5. Apparently they're doing like 10 seasons, which is absolutely ridiculous. Invincible is my favorite animated show I think I've ever watched, and I watched a lot of cartoons as kids. Is that freaking good? I think that was actually number 7. So this will be number 8. What do we got? A lot of stuff about 28 Years Later. They've got some stills from the film. You actually have Ralph Fiennes is in the film. Jodie Comer, too. You got some good actors and actresses in the film. Let's go. Number eight. Are we on number seven? I can't even keep track. Number eight, Greta Gerwig's Narnia film begins filming in July 2025. It's a very new take. It's all about rock and roll. Why are we remaking Narnia? I think we're all perfectly fine with the old Narnia films. If anything, I think they're going to butcher it. But hey, that's just me. That's just my opinion. Who do we got here? Two more. Number nine, Andrew Garfield says he was disappointed to turn down playing Frankenstein's monster in Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein movie. I was disappointed that I didn't get to do it, but meeting Jacob Elordi felt serendipitous. I don't even know what that word is. So that I could really see and hear that he's maybe needed that experience more than me. So Andrew Garfield passing up an acting experience to give it to Jacob Elordi. Good for him, but you're also missing out on a good opportunity. I don't know. We'll have to see. And then number 10, how should we round us out? Gosh, there's so many things. I really got to settle on one. Time is ticking away. Ooh, trailers for Mafia, the Old Country, and Borderlands 4 will be released on the Game Awards on Thursday. Mafia, Old Country. If no one knows, I'm a huge Mafia fan. Give me a TV show, give me a movie, and give me the video games Mafia, Mafia 2, and Mafia 3 with Link and Clay. All my favorite video game of all time. And they're making a fourth one, Mafia, the Old Country. Count me in. Count me the frick, and I'm excited. I guess they updated Thursday then. Thursday's going to be a good day. I'm excited for Thursday. A lot of fun stuff ahead to come. But those are your top 10 new things in pop culture. I mean, some hitters, some misses. It is what it is. But I'll tell you what isn't what it is, and that's what it appears to be, and that is the movie Eyes Wide Shut. Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, and Stanley Kubrick. This is described as an erotic mystery psychological drama. This is one of the weirdest movies I've ever seen. Watched it with two of my roommates. This is just insane what they're telling it to us. And, you know, the controversies with this film are even more crazy because Warner Bros. Insisted that Stanley Kubrick turn in the final cut before they insisted that Stanley Kubrick turn in the final cut before they see it. All right, the film was in the final stages of post-production, which was therefore completed by the studio in collaboration with Kubrick's estate. And this is just something not a lot of films do. And some have argued that the work that remained was minor and exclusively technical in nature, allowing the estate to faithfully complete the film based on the director's notes. However, decisions regarding sound mixing, story, and color correction would have necessarily been made without Kubrick's estate. It is what it is what it is. But what's interesting enough is that basically, after Stanley Kubrick gave the script to this movie, Eyes Wide Shut, to the studio, he died of a heart attack 4 years later, 4 days later, not years, 4 days after giving it to them. Is that not suspicious? Is that not weird? To make matters even more weird is that they cut 25 minutes of the film, all right? And I have not explained it. They haven't explained where it went. They probably burned it, but it is very, very weird. Nicole Kidman, one of the stars of the film, briefly wrote about the completion of the film and the release of the film being at the same time of JFK Jr.'s death. From her perspective, there was a lot of interest in Eyes Wide Shut before it was released, but the weekend it came out, July 16th, 1999, was the death of JFK Jr., his wife and her sister. What the heck? What does that have to do with anything? This is not what I wanted to see. Honestly, Wikipedia isn't even talking about this. I had to freestyle a lot of what I just said, but let me just tell you is that this movie reveals some things about the elites, I'm pretty sure, and it is just a wild movie. So basically, the entire premise of the film is that Tom Cruise is this big doctor, Nicole Kidman is just this housewife, and they go to this party of his rich friend, like a super rich friend, one of the richest men in New York, and it's his doctor, so Tom Cruise is a doctor, and at there, you know, Nicole Kidman is, you know, flirting with some guy, and then Tom Cruise is flirting with these two girls, and they go back home, and basically Nicole Kidman, they start smoking, and they get high, and she admits to Tom Cruise that she has been having sexual fantasies and that she would have slept with this man years ago when they met had she been given the opportunity. Tom Cruise goes out, one of his patients died, and, like, his daughter, like, kisses Tom Cruise. It's very weird, and Tom Cruise goes out, and he runs into a hooker, and he's like, hey, I want to sleep with you, all right? And she goes back, then he decides on not doing it. And basically, there's a whole lot to this film. He meets this old piano player he used to know, which he had met earlier at his rich friend's party. And basically, he's telling him, he's like, oh, is this what you do to get gigs? He's like, yeah, I play piano. And he's like, I have this gig later tonight. He's like, and Tom Cruise is like, oh, let me come watch you. And he's like, well, it's kind of weird. And Tom Cruise is like, what do you mean? He's like, well, they blindfold me, and I play the piano blindfolded. And Tom Cruise is like, oh, let me go. And he's like, no, it's super secretive. And basically, he gets a call from the people that he's going to perform it, and the password is Fidelio. Okay, and he writes it down. Tom Cruise says, Give me the password. Give me the address, and I'll go on my own. You don't even have to know. So Tom Cruise goes to this party, and it's super weird. He pulls up. You need a password. And by the way, he goes in a cab and everything, shows up to this party, and to get in, you have to have a mask and a hooded cape on. And he goes there, and it's this ritualistic sex cult, and it's so weird. And basically, the whole premise of the film is, you know, Tom Cruise escapes from there. But it's really symbolic, very weird. I think that Stanley was trying to tell us stuff that the elites do. I truly believe he was. And, you know, goes on about everything. And eventually, he starts being followed by these people. He finds out this woman they knew there was murdered. I mean, it is absolutely insane. And there's just a lot of things about this film that you realize you're just like, holy cow, this is absolutely crazy. And basically, the big reveal, spoiler alert, I should probably be saying spoiler alert, but this movie is 30 years old, is that basically his rich friend was one of the people at the party, and he knew that he was there. And the whole premise of the film is, I don't even know what the premise is. I feel like it's just eyes wide shut. You know, it's opening our eyes in a sense. Like, our eyes were all shut before seeing this, but now they're open. And it is just, it is a mind-boggling film, but it gets a 9 out of 10 for me. You know, the pacing is super slow at first, and then, like, it's never even fast-paced. It's like these drawn-out scenes, and the acting is so good, and it is just really weird. It's adapted, the entire story, off a 1926 novella called Dream's Story, which is set around Vienna in the turn of the century, and Stanley Kubrick read it and basically was inspired to make it. But I just find it weird that the studio cut a lot of footage from the final film. I want to see if they even mention it, all right? Apparently, Warner Bros. Digitally altered there was an orgy or something. They released it to block out stuff to avoid an NC-17 rating, but that's apparently that. The unrated version of Eyes Wide Shut was released in the United States on October 23rd, 2007. I don't know, but there's just a lot of weird stuff about it, and it's just not stuff they're going to tell you out in the open. It did win French Syndicate of Cinema Best Foreign Film, interestingly enough. I don't know if that matters. But really, just a weird film. Just a weird film. The entire idea that, you know, they're revealing the sex cult, it is just really, really disturbing. So, I encourage you all go watch it, experience it for yourselves. But I truly believe that this film is trying to tell us things that the elites try and keep hidden from us. So, it's certainly very interesting. Give it a look. Another great show that I've been watching, I actually finished it up. I thought it was 7 seasons. Turned out it was 8 freaking seasons, and that was Dexter. That is right, Dexter, everyone's favorite serial killer, Dexter Morgan. Entire premise of the show, Dexter Morgan, he is a serial killer, but he only kills bad guys, and he actually works for the Miami Metro Police Department. 8 seasons of this, and it was good. Let me just tell you, Michael C. Hall plays a great serial killer. His sister in this looks great. Ran from October 1st, 2006 to September 22nd, 2013. And it is good. It is truly really, really good. I had always heard about this, but I never really known what it was. I finally got around to watching it on Paramount Plus, and it was fantastic. It was honestly fantastic. Where did it actually it went on Showtime, because, you know, there's some nudity in it. There's cursing and stuff like that. But honestly, very tremendous. Very, very tremendous. I will say that it's kind of gory. It's not too gory, but, you know, it's a gory show to an extent. If I could rank the seasons, I would probably say season 4 is so good. You have this, the most prolific serial killer of all time, played by, oh my gosh, I can't remember his name. Oh my gosh, this is going to kill me. He is a very famous actor. John Lithgow, that's what his name is. He plays the serial killer, and season 4 is one of the craziest endings, one of the craziest opening sequences, and the entire season keeps you guessing. Season 4 is amazing. Season 1 and 2 are so close for me. I'm going to say season 1 just because of the big reveals. Apparently season 7 was supposed to be really good. I kind of agree. Season 7 had some crazy reveals, so it's up there for me. But truly, I'm going to be honest. People are hating on 7 and 8. I thought that 7 and 8 were super good. I thought that my only real issue is after a big event in season 4, season 5 and 6 kind of take a dip. They're kind of bland, kind of mediocre, I'm not going to lie. But the entire thing throughout the whole show is that Dexter keeps getting away with it. And he has this code he appears to, and it's super good. My one rant is it ends super dumb, okay? Because I do want to add some context here is that this ended in 2013, And we didn't get an announcement that there would be a return limited series in 2021, okay, which I'm actually going to get around to announce that. Basically, I'm going to get around to be watching that, and I'll give you my review for that. But this is a huge spoiler alert. The series essentially ends with Dexter not wanting to live with his choices anymore, abandoning his son and girlfriend, if you want to call her that, driving into a hurricane, then somehow winding up working as a logger. And he has a giant beard now. It is one of the dumbest endings that I swear. This reminded me of Game of Thrones. Reminded me of Two and a Half Men. It reminded me of... what are some other shows that I can think of that had terrible endings? I've watched a lot of... The Sopranos, not as bad as The Sopranos. Because the entire episode is usually pretty good. But it's like a lot of shows don't know how to end. All right? A lot of series don't know how to end. And this one didn't. No, they didn't know what to do, so they made everyone think Dexter was dead, and it turns out he's living off on his own. It just didn't make sense. They completely butchered his character arc. But this is one of my favorite TV shows of all time. Is it better than Game of Thrones? No. Is it better than The Sopranos? No. But it's probably up there in my top 10 for sure. I'm biasy-wise, probably 5 right now. But really, it really ends super good. There's a lot of plot twists, a lot of jaw-dropping moments, a lot of death. You never know which character is a killer, which one's going to die. Really keeps you guessing. I'm really, really happy that I got around to watching it. So Dexter gets a 8.3 out of 10 for me on the scale of 10 for TV shows, whatever you want to call it. And it's really good. I encourage you all to watch it. But like I said, season 1, 2, somewhat 3, 4 is super good. 5 and 6 kind of take a dip. I'm happy with 7 and 8. I know they aren't widely as acclaimed, but I don't think season 8 as a whole is as bad. It's usually just how, it's really just how they ended the show. So that's all your pop culture, all your movies. We got a lot of fun stuff to watch. So check it all out. In terms of NFL, here's a quick little recap of all the action that went down in week 14 of the NFL season. And shockers here and there, not so much. Kicking us off, Lions and Packers. Josh Jacobs' 3-touchdown game is cut short as the Lions win 34-31. A great win. Great win by this Lions team. Lions still haven't clinched the division. How about that? Vikings staying hot on their tail. They're 12-1, 11-game win streak. They are just on the run of a lifetime. It is just absolutely insane. I can't believe they just keep winning over and over and over again. It is ridiculous. But a good win for the Lions, 12-1. Packers 9-4 do currently hold. I believe it is either the 6th or 7th spot in the playoffs. I think it's the 6th spot right now for the NFC. So Packers do still remain in the playoffs, but it's going to take quite a bit of something if they want to really solidify a playoff spot. But a good win for the Lions. I'm always happy when the Packers lose. Sadly, Amon-Ra didn't get enough points for me, so that does make me kind of upset. But is what is. Good game there. We get into Sunday, kicking things off. Steelers and Browns. Decent game. Decent game, divisional matchup. Steelers refuse to be swept by the Browns. Steelers are now 10-3, top team in the AFC North. Great win. Great win for them. Browns 3-10, bottom of the pack, currently tied for second worst in the AFC with the Patriots, Jaguars, and Titans. Thankfully, the Raiders are worse. But Jameis Winston, always fun. Jerry Jeudy looking good. David Njoku looking good. Steelers are just better. Steelers are just better, and they're going to win the division, in my opinion, and it'll just come down to how the playoffs work. But the Browns are certainly going to need to be working on their draft capital heading into next week. Keeping us moving, Saints beat the Giants 14-11. Giants almost led a comeback. Drew Lock almost did enough, but I mean, 21-49. Yikes, bud. Absolutely yikes. Drew Lock is just, he's not bad. He's not bad, but he's not good. He's not good. Let me just tell you that. He's also with a pretty rough Giants team. Their defense is their best part. But this is outstanding. 0-7 at home. Giants tickets must be dirt cheap. They're on an 8-game losing streak. 2-11 are the worst team in the NFC and are tied for second worst in the league. As for their opponents, the Saints, keeping their season alive with a win here. They are 5-8, 1 game behind the Falcons and 2nd for the NFC South, and 2 games behind the Buccaneers for 1st in the NFC South. It's going to be tough. to make the playoffs. I mean, I want you to know the 5th seed and 6th seed are definitely going to the Vikings and Packers. All right, it's going to be a matter of that 7th seed, if the Commanders can hold on to it, or if you're going to see a Rams, Seahawks, whoever wins the NFC West, this runner-up in the NFC West, see if they can do it. But mediocre game, but the, you know, low-key the Giants almost rallied, but still not enough. Dolphins and Jets giving us a barn burner. Dolphins defense putting up a whopping 0 points for me. Absolutely atrocious. Rodgers goes for 339 yards. It was impressive stuff. Impressive stuff there for the Dolphins. I mean, you got typical Tyreek and Jalen Waddle masterclass. Tyreek, 10 catches, 115 yards, and a touchdown. Even rushed one time for 6 yards. Good stuff for him. Dolphins sitting at 6-7. Do we still have some playoff hopes alive? As for the Jets, 3-10, 4-game losing streak. They're bad. This Jets team just can't win a game. Rodgers has completely given up. This Rodgers experiment was a huge failure, and it's rough. Jets are still in the same position they were before they got Aaron Rodgers. Dolphins at 6-7. It's going to be a battle. They're going to have to win out probably to compete with your Colts, Ravens, Chargers, and Broncos for those spots, that 5, 6, and 7. So it's going to be tough, but Dolphins still hanging in there. Good for the Dolphins, honestly. But yeah, Jets, it's rough. Rough to be a Jets fan, let me tell you that. Jaguars and Titans, 10-6. 10-6, Jaguars win. Brian Thomas Jr., the only bright spot for that team, honestly. The Jaguars, though, snappy to losing streak. Getting a win, 3-10 now. Good for them. Titans, 3-10 now, are the worst team in the AFC South. 2-game losing streak. But yeah, just two terrible teams dueling it out. There is little to no benefits from either of these teams. They're going to be trying to get a good draft pick. Jaguars, I'm sure they had some high hopes before the season. Man, they've just completely dwindled. Excuse me. Just ridiculous. Just absolutely ridiculous. Titans, I mean, Titans need a rebuild. Titans are all over the place. Titans just have never had a good quarterback for the longest time. Honestly, they've had Derrick Henry for so long, they have forgotten how to use their wide receivers. Keeping our games rolling along, we had the Vikings and the Falcons. Vikings dropping 42 points on the Falcons, including 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. We're so good. We are so freaking good. I mean, Sam Darnold, Justin Jefferson, and I'm losing my freaking mind. I'm all over the place here. Jordan Addison. Why was I going to say Justin Addison? Made no sense. Jordan Addison going off, Justin Jefferson going off. Same with Sam Darnold. Darnold, 22 for 28, 347 yards, 5 touchdowns. Addison, 8 catches, 133 yards, 3 touchdowns. Justin Jefferson, 7 catches, 132 yards, 2 touchdowns. We all went off. Kirko Chains, no touchdowns, 2 picks. Boom. Boom, boom, boom. That's all I got to say. The Minnesota Vikings are 11-2. It's weird. It's weird being this good, all right, guys? We have some newfound fame in Minnesota, okay? It's not easy being the best team in the NFL, unofficially. Well, of course, unofficially. But yes, we are doing super good, and I'm super happy. 11-2, 6-game winning streak. 6-1 at home, okay? We are balling at home. And, you know, I was saying we're going to win out. And, I mean, honestly, we have the Bears. We got the Seahawks. We got the Packers and the Lions. They're all close matchups. That Bears team, I know we can beat. I know we can beat them. We're at home on a Monday night. I am very confident. Seahawks, you never know what Seahawks team is going to show up. You never know. Honestly, you never know what the Seahawks team. They're hit or miss. They're good, but they have an 8-5 record, so it's they're losing games here and there. Packers, I'm worried we might split with them, but we'll see. And Lions, I mean, if we're on a roll, you know, if us and the Lions don't lose until that, and the winner of us, our game, plays to go to get the number one seed in the NFC, oh man, cinema right there. As for the Falcons, I mean, I got nothing much to say here. They're on a 4-game losing streak. They've lost the NFC South lead. Buccaneers are now the top seed in the NFC South. I don't even know if the Falcons are going to make the playoff. This team has no chemistry. This team has no mojo. And quite frankly, this team is not going anywhere. Start Michael Penix Jr. That's what you get for chasing the money, Kirk. All right, but I'm not happy. I'm not mad at all, I should say, that we have Sam Darnold. That boy is beautiful when he has a football in his hands. Eagles, Panthers, 22-16. You almost saw a huge upset from the Panthers in this game. The only issue is that this Eagles defense is good. Eagles defense is so good. Xavier Leggett also dropped a wide open touchdown pass, I do want to add. But 22-16, Eagles really had to lock in here to get the win. Great win for them too. Much needed for this Eagles team as they're trying to reclaim the number one spot in the NFC. 11-2, 9-game winning streak. They boast an impressive 108 point differential. They're good. They're really freaking good. They have a tough schedule, though. You know, they play the Steelers, Commanders. I mean, Cowboys and Giants isn't too bad to edge it out. But that Steelers game is going to be real tough for them. Impressive stuff from this Eagles team, even dealing with a little adversity. They're able to overcome it. And Saquon and Jalen Hurts, those are my boys. All right, those are my fantasy football boys. And by the way, I'm going to the semifinals in my 16-man fantasy football league. I finished second in the league. I had the most points for on the year. I know ball. I also won pickups this week, guys. 10 of 13 on predictions. Listen to Zachary. Panthers, 3-10, 3-game losing streak. They have a minus 155 point differential. Oh, yikes. Yeah. Panthers, they're bad. But Bryce Young has been looking not as bad as he did at the start of the season. So I do sense some potential with him. I sense some potential with this boy. Why are we on the Philadelphia Eagles schedule? Bring me to the main NFL schedule, please. Was that our final noon game? Yeah, I think so. Our final noon game right here was the Raiders and the Bucks. Bucks win 28-13 in this one. Let me just tell you, this Raiders team is just terrible. Terrible. And I don't mean to just knock on Aiden O'Connell, but, you know, 2-11, 9-game losing streak. They have one of the worst offenses in the league. 2-11 is just an atrocious record. Gardner Minshew just never worked out as a starter, but I'd honestly put him back in because Aiden just is not clutch. All right, they were not targeting their only good option, which is Brock Bowers. Jacoby Myers is getting a couple touches here and there, but Brock Bowers is your main guy. You got to feed him to have success. They have no running backs. Madison sucks. Sincere sucks. Zamir sucks. Abdullah sucks. They all suck. All right, this Raiders team is going to be in a massive rebuild, and they might take Shador Sanders. You never know. As for the Buccaneers, you know, hey, they've overtaken the NFC South. Great for them. They have a plus 50 point differential, 3-game winning streak, 7-6. You know, it's going to be tough to hold on. Tough to hold on with 4 games left. Chargers defense is good. This Cowboys defense, pretty bad. Pretty bad. Then you play the Panthers, but that Panthers team can be sneaky good. Same with the Saints in week 18. I'll be curious to see, but this Buccaneers team, I sense a lot of prowess with them. And they picked up a good win here. Seahawks and Cardinals, man. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, my favorite wide receiver. I absolutely love him. 30-18. Seahawks are solidifying the NFC West. Incredible. 8-5. 4-game win streak. Good stuff. Good stuff. Can't complain. Plus 19 point differential. 5-1 on the road is super good. So when the Vikings do travel to Seattle with a 3-4 home record, I'm confident in the Minnesota Vikings' chances. But on the road, Seahawks have been doing great. Zach Charbonnet had 38 fantasy points. He was looking incredible. Geno Smith is a proven starter. Happy with what I've seen. As for the Cardinals, at one point they were 6-4. Now they're 6-7. 3-game losing streak. And it's just, they are just playing good teams. And they are just not as good as better teams. They've now fallen to third in the NFC West. But the NFC West is separated by literally a game or two. So anything can happen. But Seahawks, good win. I have more Seahawks players than Cardinals players. So happy with the result. 49ers and Bears. I mean, this Bears team is bad. 38-13, the 49ers finally got a good win, let me tell you. Long overdue. 6-7 now. They have a 308 and 308 points for against points against. So zero. 0 point differential. Good win here, keeping the playoff hopes somewhat alive. Even without Christian McCaffrey, Garendo's looking good. Juwan Jennings is eaten. It was a team win here. Team win for the 49ers. As for the Bears, I mean, I thought they were overdue for a win, but I guess not. 0-6 on the road. 7-game losing streak. 4-9. I don't know what it's going to take for these Bears. Caleb Williams has actually been playing pretty good football. Romo Dunze looks good. DJ Moore looks good. You have DeAndre Swift in the backfield. And it's like they just have no mojo for some reason. It makes no sense. But I'm not really complaining because they're a divisional rival. And I hope we beat them next Monday. Game of the week, Rams and Bills. It was fantastic. 44-42, including a 51-point performance from Josh Allen. It might have even been 54 fantasy points. I don't know what it was, but Josh Allen goes for over 50 fantasy points. Listen to these stats. 342 yards, 3 touchdowns. That's through the air. 82 yards rushing, 3 touchdowns, 6 touchdowns from Josh Allen. He was an absolute monster. Khalil Shakir going for a tutty. Matt Collins tutty. Ty Johnson tutty. The team was in agreement. It was absolutely phenomenal. As for the Rams, Stafford found his man, Puka Nacua. I mean, 5 rushes, one of which was a touchdown. 12 catches, 162 yards for a touchdown. Puka went for 41 fantasy points. And this Rams team, they're saying, we ain't going nowhere. We ain't going nowhere. We're trying to make the playoffs too. Rams 7-6, 2-game win streak, are now second in the AFC West. As for the Bills, another close loss here. 397 points for. They are the best offense in the AFC. 10-3, not too bad. They're also 6-0 at home, which is pretty good. Josh Allen for MVP. Josh Allen for MVP. You heard it here first, folks. Josh Allen for MVP. That's my prediction at the moment. Great win, though, and just a fantasy score. Just a ton of fantasy points. Sunday Night Football is what determined my matchup to go to the semifinals as the Chiefs win 19-17 on a freaking another winning field goal. And this one was a doinked. Insane. Insane, I can't believe it. Chiefs, 3-game winning streak, 7-0 at home, 12-1, the best team in the NFL. I don't get it. I don't get how they keep winning. How do they do it? How do they do it? Chargers 8-5 are in the playoffs at the moment. They are in that 7th or 6th seed, I don't know. Probably the 7th seed. Good stuff for them. They have a plus 70 point differential. 207 points given up. They are one of the best defenses in the league. But, I mean, this Chiefs team is so good. So freaking good. And who are the rest of their opponents? The Browns, the Texans, the Steelers, and the Broncos. So I see them winning at least 2 of the 3 of those final 4. But damn it, the Chiefs won again. I can't believe it. Not a big Chiefs guy at all. Not a big Chargers guy, but I was rooting against Gus Edwards, Quentin Johnson, and Cam Dicker. And it was close. Quentin Johnson and Gus both getting touchdowns. But that Chiefs defense coming up massive. Good stuff. Happy with it. We move on, and then we had Monday Night Football, and Ja'Marr Chase sent me packing in my sleeper fantasy playoffs. I'm not going to the championship. I'm going to the 3rd and 4th place game as the Bengals explode for 27-20 points. But I shouldn't say the Bengals explode. It was Ja'Marr Chase, who had 14 catches for 177 yards and 2 touchdowns. He was insane. Also had 1 rush, 14 yards. Bengals finally getting a win. Finally getting a win, long overdue, against this Cowboys team, which sucks. Bengals 5-8 with 362 points. All right, but 360 points given up. Their defense is the issue. Chase Brown was balling too, at over 20 fantasy points. Joe Shiesty was going off. Good stuff from that Bengals team. Cowboys 5-8, minus 98 point differential. They are 1-6 at home and are just bad. Just rough stuff. Just rough stuff from this Cowboys team. Their defense is just not as good as it was last year for some reason. I don't really understand why. I feel like it shouldn't be as bad, but it is. But yes, Cowboys dropping an L. Not really too surprised. We'll see how they round up the season. I don't think either of these teams are going to make the playoffs. But your big news from week 14, if you will, is that the Minnesota Vikings are going to the Super Bowl. They're going to win the Super Bowl, and they're going to finally end their drought of never winning the Super Bowl. So you're ready here first, folks. We are rocking with the Vikings every single week, but that's all we got for NFL Week 14. Let's get into the cream of the crop, which is your UFC 310 recap. A lot of action, a lot of fun fights. Let's do it. UFC 310 was the ending of our final pay-per-view slate for 2024. Was it good? Was it bad? You know, it's tough to really say. In hindsight, I think the prelims were way better than the actual main card. But 10-4 in predictions, not too bad. We went 311 for 189 before the upcoming event this upcoming Saturday between Joaquin Buckley and Colby Covington, which means unless I go 0-11 or like 2-11, I think we're going to end the year with under 200 incorrect predictions. And of course, we went over 300 predictions this year. This is our best predictions year of all time. But in terms of UFC 310, kick things off, Kennedy and Chuko and Lucas Brzezic, and round one knockout for Kennedy and Chuko, his 10th of his career. And by the way, 2-0 at heavyweight. Between October 26th and December 7th, 2 round one knockouts, okay? Insane work from Kennedy and Chuko, who had lost earlier in March. And earlier in March, I thought they were going to cut him, and now he's looking better than ever. As for Lucas, he has gone 1-5 in the UFC and has been knocked out in round one 3 times. So Lucas Brzezic is going to get cut, but Kennedy Achuku, I loved what I saw from him. He absolutely clipped Lucas coming in. Down he went, a couple follow-up punches, and that was that. I'm excited to see what 2025 brings for Kennedy. I would love to see him in the rankings. Okay, number 15th ranked Shamil Gaziev, number 13th ranked Waldo Cortez Acosta, number 12th ranked Marcos Ruggiero de Lima, even tied to Ivasa would be a fun matchup for him. Other than that, you have your Muhammad Usmans. You have your, gosh, I'm trying to think of other people who are unranked heavyweights. There's a lot of bubby unranked heavyweights out there, but I'm confident that Kenny will be able to hang with them. So Kenny, lots of opportunities for him. Lucas, not many. And a 50K performance bonus too. Great way to start off the evening. How about we keep it rolling as Chase Hooper runs through Clay Guida around one armbar. Another performance of the night. Performance bonus for Chase Hooper. This will be Chase's 8th career submission and 12th career finish. Let's make that a 4-fight win streak, 4-0 at lightweight. Chase Hooper's legit. Chase Hooper is as legit as they come. This fight lasted 3 minutes 41 seconds. 2 minutes and 8 seconds control time for Chase. 3 of 6 on takedowns. The formula was simple. I'm just going to go across the ring, take him down. Got into mount, strapped up an armbar, and that was that. Clay Guida forced to tap. This is now a 3-fight losing streak for Clay. He is also 1-4 in his last 5. This is the, 12th time in his career he's been submitted. How about that? Yikes. That's all I got to say to that. More action. It was exciting. It's always good when your prelims open with round one finishes. That's how you actually get people interested and entertained. In terms of Chase getting a ranked opponent, I don't think it's time yet. I think we keep building him up personally. But, you know, I think Grant Dawson has a fight with Diego Ferreira coming up. I would love the loser of that to take on Chase Hooper, sort of test him, because both those guys are good grapplers with decent striking. I think that is what should be next for Chase Hooper, but man, this kid, super young, super talented. I mean, 25 years old, submitting Clay Guida in 3 minutes 41 seconds, insane. And he made 50K. You can't be mad about that. Moving on, third matchup of the night, Michael Chiesa and Max Griffin. I can't believe I actually nailed this one, because I knew that Chiesa was better than Max Griffin. This never really crossed my mind, but watching it fold out live really was just validation. And by the way, Michael Chiesa, 2 minutes into round 3, gets a rear naked chokehold. The 12th career submission for Michael Maverick Chiesa. Great win. 2-fight winning streak now in 2024. 2-0 in 2024. Both of them, rear naked chokehold finishes. Incredible for Chiesa. Absolutely turning his career around. As for Max Griffin, first time in his career he's been submitted. Yeah. Approaching 40 next year, probably going to get cut, but they'll probably feed Max Griffin to a young, hungry welterweight. I think Thema Kirimbo could be a great option. We're going to get to him in a bit. But in terms of Chiesa, I mean, this fight, I mean, round 1 and 2, it was just grappling affairs. Just grappling affairs up against the fence, getting down to the ground, very competitive. And Chiesa was just getting the better of every exchange. And he looked good, he performed good, and he's back in the win column. And mind you, this was a ranked guy. This was a legit guy, so I don't really want to, you know, not give him another up-and-comer, because, you know, we've kind of been having him fight legends, but I don't really know what to do, you know. Randy Brown recently lost to Brian Battle. We're going to talk about him again in a minute, too. I love matchmaking on the same card. I think that would be a great matchup together. I think those two would fit well together. So Randy Brown, Michael Chiesa, my next prediction for who should fight each other. I just don't know if Chiesa's ready for ranked opponents, but we'll have to see. Good stuff, and we start the night off 3-0. After that, Joshua Van, Cody Durden. Rankings haven't updated yet. By the way, rankings haven't updated yet for some reason, but Cody Durden was ranked number 14. Joshua Van landed 165 significant strikes. Insane. Insane. He went absolutely off, and I was loving it so much, including 72 in round 2, 63 in round 3. Joshua Van's striking was on point. Got taken out twice in round 1. Okay, probably dropped round 1, but managed to come back. Round 2 was so dominant. Round 3 even more dominant. Cody Durden was a bloody mess. And the 23-year-old Joshua Van, okay, the 23-year-old is now going to be ranked number 14 in the UFC. Maybe even 13. I don't even freaking know. But Joshua Van, incredible. He is 5-1 in the UFC, looking better than ever. I mean, I love him. I love Joshua Van, man. 12-2. He's looking phenomenal. As for Cody Durden, ending the year on an L, not so good, you know. He is hit or miss with what happens. 1-3 in his last 4. I do still think there are options out there for Cody Durden. maybe against some up-and-comers in the men's flyweight division. But in terms of Joshua Van, he's not ready for the elite of the elite yet, but someone like Manel Cape, someone like Tim Elliott, someone like Tagirlin Bekov, there's a lot of options out there for Joshua Van, and I'm excited to see what he brings to the table. Great win for Joshua. Cody, just tough game. Following that, Eric Anders, Chris Weidman, son of a gun. Son of a gun, you know, I truly thought Weidman was back. In round one, he was looking good. Okay, knocked out Eric Anders, survived 4 takedown attempts. He was looking good. And then round two, he literally got taken down. It wasn't even an actual takedown landed. He, like, fell or something, and he got ground and pounded. Literally the entire round was him getting ground and pounded. And, you know, I hate to say it was an early stoppage, but when you're getting ground and pounded for 3 minutes and 40 seconds, it's kind of hard for the ref to not step in. So Eric Anders getting a TKO victory, incredible. His 10th of his career, his first since December of 2022, insane. Good win for Eric, 2-0 in 2024, also on a 2-fight winning streak, 3-1 in his last 4, only loss was a fight of the night. Eric Anders looking up. As for Chris Weidman, 1-3 in his last 4, you know, I think it's better off to mention that since going undefeated, he is 3-8 in his last 11. Weidman, I say retire. I think you should retire, Weidman. There's no reason you should still be fighting. And anyone else that he fights is going to just run through Chris. So, kind of a shame. There's always, I don't even know, let's have Tony Ferguson go up to middleweight. Tony Ferguson can fight Chris Weidman. I'm being completely ridiculous here, but Weidman, it's time to call it a career. You had a good run. No need to keep getting knocked yourself out. He's doing the BJ Penn treatment. Okay, that's what's happening. And the funny thing is he had success in round one. In round two, it's like he just got taken down, couldn't get back up, and was just dominated. So Eric Anders, this was a catchweight, but he does fight at middleweight. I don't really know. There's so many unranked middleweights out there, but they just announced Edmund Shabazian is in a fight, and I think the winner of that fight, I honestly can't recall, or even they have Chris Curtis versus Roman Kapilov, the loser of that versus Eric Anders, or the winner of Edmund Shabazian's fight with, his name is eluding me, I think those could be some good options for Eric Anders. Good win here career-wise, and he'll move along. After that, we got into a doozy between Brian Battle and Randy Brown. Nothing as exciting as we were promised. And a controversial split decision. I don't know. I thought Brian Battle did enough to win this one. Round one, Randy Brown outstruck him 21-14, landed 2 of 2 takedowns, but Brian Battle had more control time. Round two, Battle outstrikes him 22-15 significantly. 2 minutes and 37 seconds control time. Round three, 35 total strikes for Brian compared to 30 for Randy Brown. 3.5 minutes control time. I thought Brian Battle did enough. It was certainly nothing as exciting as we've seen in his entire career, but not all the wins on the come up are going to be pretty. Brian improves here with this split decision to 13-2. Randy Brown falls to 19-6 and snaps his 3-fight winning streak, which really sucks. Not a fight of the night. Very technical, very clinch heavy. Randy Brown calling him a bum on social media afterwards. I think that Randy Brown was a little bit upset. But Brian Battle gets a big win here, continues to move along. You know, it sucks because if he would have had a big win here, I'd love to see him in the rankings. But there's another guy who won on this card. We're going to mention him in just a second. And that's why I actually think Brian Battle should fight next. But in terms of Randy Brown, I think Randy and Michael Chiesa match up pretty dang well. That's my opinion. We'll have to see. I think Michael Chiesa should just be fighting all these veterans and just keep submitting them. Good win for Brian Battle in terms of career-wise, but in terms of actual performance, not the hottest. After that, still can't believe this fight wasn't on the main card. Still absolutely taken aback. Still pissed about it, but the number 9 ranked Aljamain Sterling took on the number 5 ranked Mosfar Evlov, and it's rare when I watch a grappling only matchup that I'm actually entertained, but this was good. This was good. In terms of fights that impress me, Mosfar and Aljamain Sterling, for two guys whose only game plan is to grapple, they truly came out here and gave it their all. By the way, a total of 20 significant strikes landed between the both of them. You know, nothing too impressive. But in terms of the career-wise, you know, Mosfar had some pretty bland performances coming up. But, I mean, in terms of his last few performances, I've been pretty satisfied with it. 29-28 across the board. 8 significant strikes for Mozafar, 12 for Aljo, 135 total strikes for Mozafar, 45 for Aljamain. So you can see that the striking was going for Mozafar. 4 of 5 on takedowns for Mozafar, 6 of 8 for Aljamain, 6 minutes 9 seconds control time for Mozafar, 6 minutes 16 seconds for Sterling. I'm talking, these two were so competitive. Round 1, Aljamain got the best of him. Aljamain won round 1 in my scorecard. Now, Mozafar did end the round on top, which did kind of sway people, but I got Aljamain taking round 1. Round 2, clear Mozafar round. 2 takedowns landed, 3.5 minutes control time. Despite getting 2 reversals, Aljamain kept winding up on the bottom. Round 3, Aljo landed 3 of 3 on takedowns. Mozafar 1 of 2 for minute 49, but just 72 significant strikes to 72 total strikes to 13, not significant. Mozafar was just laying into Aljo. Competitive up until the bell. Didn't know whose arm was going to get raised, but the correct man did in Mozafar Evlov. 19-0. He is also an outstanding 9-0 in the UFC. And in terms of impressive performances, you know, Dan Ige to Shang Wu Choi, you know, his first 7, you know, first 6, I should say, not that entertaining. The 7th, that Diego Lopez fight, fight of the night. Incredible. The Arnold Allen fight, bloody at war. This one, a grappling matchup, which watching it live was very impressive. I wouldn't know if I wouldn't go back and like show people it, but good enough to an extent. Aljo, you know, first loss at featherweight. It sucks, but I don't think I would hold it too much against Aljo. In terms of the rankings, Mozafar, Diego Lopez for title shot. Diego versus Mozafar for a title shot, it seems only fitting. We now know that Diego Lopez is taking on Josh Emmett, but I don't know how that one's going to go. And I mean, honestly, Mozafar has no right fighting Yair. Yair is nowhere near a title shot. He's ranked number 4. I'd personally do Yair versus someone like, honestly, Yair versus Bryce Mitchell, who we're going to talk about in a second. That could be a fight you do. But Mozafar is on the verge of a title shot, and I think he should get it. As for Aljo, you know, there's other fun fights, but I'm getting the vibe he may be fighting someone like Lerone Murphy. Him versus Bryce would be another great grappling matchup, which I think Aljamain would win. But hey, you know, we'll see what they do. If it's up to me, I'll do Aljamain versus Bryce Mitchell. We'll do that. And I will do Mozafar versus, I'd honestly give Mozafar a title shot. Personally, I'm giving Mozafar a title shot after Volkanovski gets a rematch. After that, third performance bonus on the night as Vicente Luque runs through Thamba Grimbo with a 52-second anaconda choke. Thamba locked it in. And Thamba got locked in, I should say. Vicente locked it in, and it was over in 52 seconds. Yeah. Thamba went to sleep. Vicente Luque is back, I guess. 9th career submission, 20th career finish in 23 wins. Good for him. Good for Vicente here. Thamba, this does hurt, snapping his 4-fight winning streak. Yikes. Also, second time he's been spinned in the UFC. But we have to remember this was a huge step up for Thamba, and clearly he wasn't ready. Clearly, he wasn't ready. I do think Thamba Grimbo versus someone like Max Griffin could be fun. But for Vicente Luque, you know, he wanted a top 10 opponent. He also wanted Jorge Masvidal. I love the Jorge Masvidal fight. I think that Jorge Masvidal fight is perfect. But in terms of a top 10 opponent, there's no one for you, Vicente. I'd say Gilbert Burns, but you two are boys, so that's not going to work. You could do Ian Garry as a bounce-back fight. But honestly, I get the vibe Vicente is going to be a stepping stone for some other up-and-coming welterweight. This was over before it began, and I picked Thamba, so I was kind of sad, but hey, good win for Vicente. You know, he's always kind of a feel-good story, because he almost died, so feel-good story for Thamba. Not for Thamba, for Vicente. I keep saying Thamba. Thamba, I'm sorry you lost. You'll be back. After that, light heavyweight matchup between Dominic Reyes and Anthony Smith. And Dominic Reyes, you know, don't blink now. The comeback has started. 2 finishes in 2 fights in 2024, both of them knockouts. Dominic Reyes looking better than ever. How about 9 career knockouts and 14 career wins? Good stuff. He's officially back. But in terms of Anthony Smith, retire, what was this performance? Guys, I want you to know this fight lasted 4 minutes and 46 seconds in round number 2. Okay, round 1, Dominic Reyes outstruck him 48-21. I don't know what happened, but round 2, 73 significant strikes to 0. What are we doing here, okay? I have no idea. This was all against the clinch. Anthony Smith was, like, leaning down. Apparently, Anthony Smith kept saying, hit me, I want to feel something, to Dominic Reyes. I don't know. It was kind of weird, but Anthony Smith, time to retire. 2-fight losing streak, 1-3 in your last 4. I mean, he's clearly got some CTE. He needs to stop. Okay, Anthony Smith, retire. I'm not even going to offer another fight for you. Anthony Smith needs to retire. in terms of Dominic Reyes, you know, I think number 10 ranked Johnny Walker is an awesome fight. A rematch with Ozdemir at 9, Krylov at 8. That 8 to 11 range is going to be the prime spot for Dominic Reyes. Personally, for me, I want to see Johnny Walker versus Dominic Reyes. Dominic Reyes, man, I'm so happy. 2 wins in 2024. What a bounce back win for this guy's career. Hey, maybe another title shot is in the cards. But with that, we got into the main card. Du Choi, Nate Landwehr kicking us off, and sadly, it was not good. Du Choi absolutely demolished Nate Landwehr. Nate Landwehr getting TKO'd for the, what was it, fourth time in his career. Yeah. Yeah, tough stuff for Landwehr. 78 significant strikes, 25, 4 of 5 on takedowns. This was really Du Choi taking him down and ground and pounding him. So, Nate Landwehr, tough loss. You know, he's hit or miss with some of these performances. But Du Choi, man, 2-0 in 2024. Both knockouts. Good stuff for the Korean Superboy, Du Choi. 13th career knockout. Happy with this for him, honestly. You know, it wasn't the most entertaining, but he went out there, found a method to victory. And hey, look at that. You know, Edson Barbosa has a fight coming up with somebody. Oh my gosh, who is Edson Barbosa fighting coming up? He's fighting somebody. But the loser winner that against Du Choi, I'd be very much down for. Who is Edson fighting? I honestly cannot recall. Can I actually get a check on Edson Barbosa on if he has an upcoming fight? He doesn't. Okay, so Edson Barbosa versus Du Choi. I think that would be a fantastic fight. Let's make it. Take it to the bank. Let's make it official. After that, you know, Bryce Mitchell, Crown Gracie, about as bad could get. You know, I knew Crown Gracie was bad, but I didn't realize he was, like, actually, like, this bad. Like, atrocious. The only good to come out of this is that Bryce Mitchell absolutely knocked his brains out in round number 3. How about that? Bryce Mitchell getting his first career knockout for the Flat Earther. Tail of the tape, 26 significant strikes to 6. 2 of 2 on takedowns for Bryce. 8.5 minutes control time. 4 minutes 23 in round 1. 4 minutes 06 in round 2. Just ran through him. You know, Gracie would just take guard. Like, he would take guard. Like, so Bryce and him would be clinched. Crown Gracie would take guard and, like, hop on him. Like, you know when your girlfriend hops up in your arms? You know, and you, like, go under your legs, you know, put your hands on her butt type of stuff? That's what he would do. And Bryce would literally just go down. He's like, okay, now I'm in top position. Like, I'm in top mount. What? Same thing happened in round 1. Same thing happened in round 2. In round 3, when he went to do it, Bryce slammed his head down. Crown, like, gets a little wobbled. And not just one nasty elbow, but another nasty elbow. And Crown Gracie was knocked out cold. Good for Crown getting knocked out. I mean, come on. But Bryce Mitchell, what a way to rebound after getting knocked out last December. Took a year off. Looked phenomenal. 17-3. And Thug Nasty is poised for some big things in 2025. A lot of options for him. Number 10 ranked Calvin Kattar. Number 9 ranked Aljamain Sterling. And I'd even say number 7 ranked Arnold Allen are at the top of my list for Bryce Mitchell. I think Bryce and Aljamain just match up so well together. You know, it's like a step down from most of our grappling for Aljamain. And it's a step up from Crown Gracie for Bryce. I think that's a perfect matchup you do right there. Crown Gracie, cut him. I don't want to see him again. Truly get him out of my sight. He's atrocious. He's tarnished the Gracie name, but he does not deserve the Gracie last name. He's just Crown. He's Crown's disease, for goodness sakes. Bryce Mitchell, big fan of yours. Good victory. With that, what was supposed to be a fantastic matchup turned into disaster, and it was going well. It was going well between Cyril Gane and Alexander Volkov. And then round 3 comes around, and Gane just gets taken down and just, like, can't get back up. It was so weird. You know, round 1, he landed a takedown of his own. Volkov went 2 of 3. Gane was able to get back up, looked good. Round 2, he even took Volkov down, was outstriking him. And then round 3 comes around, and Volkov lands a takedown and just can't get back up. 68 total strikes to 4. And then everyone was mad at the decision, but I honestly gave Gane round 1 and 2. So I wasn't, like, too mad. Like, obviously, like, in hindsight, it looked like he lost the fight, but I thought Gane landed the better strikes in round 1. You know, he did eat some shots, but round 2, 27-25, significant strikes, much more of a striking affair. I just, you know, I get that people are mad. I was a little surprised that Gane won it, but at the same time, I picked him, so I wasn't. But, I mean, Cyril Gane improves a 13-2, two-fight winning streak. He's now probably going to be taking on the winner of Sergey Pavlovich and Jerzynia Rozenstruik when they fight. But, I mean, it is what it is. I don't really care. In terms of Alexander Volkov, you know, tough loss. Even Dana said, like, that decision was effed up. Which, I mean, okay, Dana, whatever you say. But they got the number 6 ranked Colton Almeida and the number 7th ranked Sergey Spivak fighting. Winner of that can take on Volkov. And then after all those matchups take place, we'll see the state of the heavyweight division. Because if Tom Aspinall does fight John Jones, the division will change forever. I want you all to know that. This was kind of a doozy, kind of a downer. And, you know, we'd already watched grappling in the last two, and it was like to watch it again was just excruciating. It was kind of a doozy. After that, the co-main event, Shavkat, Ian Garry. This one as competitive as it gets. As competitive as it gets. The number 3 ranked Sean Shavkat Rachmanov. The number 7 ranked Ian Garry. Competitive as it gets. Totals from the fight, 42 significant strikes for Ian, 37 for Shavkat. Total strikes, 102 for Ian, 65 for Shavkat. Shavkat, 2 of 10 on takedowns, Ian, 1 of 2. 11 minutes and 41 seconds control time for Shavkat. 2 minutes, 32 seconds of Ian Garry. So immediately the control time tells me Shavkat won over 2 rounds, okay? Round 1, Shavkat wins, right? A lot of clinch work. He landed 1 big shot. Ian Garry didn't do much, okay? Shavkat takes round 1. Round 2, similar to round 1. Clinch work, Shavkat lands the final big shots here and there and takes it. Round 3, though, Ian Garry wins it. Okay, outstrikes him 14 to 11, looking good. Ian Garry takes it. All right, round 4 comes around. He finally gets his takedown. Shavkat gets 2 of 3 takedowns, 3 minutes of control time, outstrikes him significantly 14 to 11, and now Ian Garry needed a finish, and in one of the craziest moments I've ever seen, Ian Garry not only takes the back of Shavkat, but locks in not one, but 2 rear naked chokes, and the entire bloodline of Genghis Khan is up there in Genghis Khan heaven going, "You can't tap Shavkat, it's in your bloodline, we got horses running, hawks are flying," and Shavkat escaped the submission. Insane. He escapes, he survives, and he takes control of the round for the final 3 minutes. Shavkat, I can't believe he did it. 48-47 across the scoreboard. He lost round 5 and round 3, but he won round 2, 1, 2, and 4. All the judges agreed, all the world agreed, and Shavkat remains undefeated at 19-0, but don't blink. The first time he hasn't gotten a finish. And after watching this fight, we did learn Shavkat was injured coming into this. Also, in the Cyril Gane fight, Cyril Gane broke all of his toes, which is pretty crazy. So Shavkat was injured, which did kind of hinder his ability. But I will be a bit worried for that Bilal Muhammad fight, because Bilal puts a pressure on you right away, and he's got to be careful. Truly got to be careful. Shavkat was putting the pressure on the whole fight, so if Bilal puts pressure on Shavkat, he'll have to be careful. But you can't pay me to root for Bilal. You can't pay me, honestly. And actually, he came in after the fight to square off, and the security guards didn't know who he was, and Joe Rogan absolutely flamed him. They said, "He doesn't know. They don't know that's the world champion." It was so funny. Good win for Shavkat. Ian Garry, learning experience. 15-1. Your only loss is to a 19-0 guy, and, you know, he couldn't finish you. It says a lot about Ian Garry. In terms of what's next, Shavkat title shot. Ian Garry, I think Leon Edwards. I think Ian Garry can hang with Leon Edwards. Truly, I believe that. I truly believe that. I mean, I don't know what else you do. You know, I think he's better than everyone below him. I think, you know, the Colby Covington, Joaquin Buckley winner, you could potentially fight. But I truly believe we should test him against Leon Edwards. He seems ready to meet. Truly does. But Ian was humble. Ian was well coached. And honestly, you know, as much as people flack Ian, he looked pretty good here. So tough loss for Ian. You know, you're long learning defeated, but you took Shavkat to the limit. And hey, you survived Shavkat. I think that's even more impressive. After that, main event, I want you all to know, like, a 5-round co-main event is draining. You know, there were some big moments, but a lot of clinch work, a lot of grappling. We get to the main event, Pantoa taking out the debuting Kaya Sakura, and from the get-go, it was entertaining, except for the fact Pantoa just knew that Sakura couldn't grapple with him. Took him down to round 1, took him down round 2, and despite Kaya landing some nasty knees, some punches here and there, you know, he did eat some big punches too. Pantoa took him down, locked in a rear naked choke around 2, and that was that. That was that. I'm not even mad Pantoa won. I feel good for Pantoa, showing how good he freaking is. I mean, the win streak for Pantoa now is at, I think, 6, 7 fights now. His 3rd title defense, I mean, he's running through the flyweight division. I mean, he called out Demetrius Johnson. He had no one else to call out in the division. Kaya Sakura, you know, it's unfortunate you've been finished. First time his career's been finished by submission. I mean, that was his weakness. That was his weakness coming in, and it unfortunately played out that way. Pantoa, good win for him. In terms of matchmaking next, you know, I think that Pantoa and Kaikar France is more entertaining because it's a new name. but Brandon Royval holds a better claim. So we'll see what transpires there. As for Kaya Sakura, I think him versus Kai Kara-France could be fun. Him versus Brandon Royval. So I think we do a little matchmaking there. Because I personally want to see Brandon Moreno versus Tatsuro Taira for the next title shot later. But you either do Kai versus Brandon or Kai versus Kai. Actually, let's do Kai versus Kai. Kai Kara-France versus Kai Kara, Kaya Sakura. And then you do Brandon Royval versus Pantoa, which I mean, gosh, there's really no one for Pantoa to fight. He's beaten the number one guy, the number two guy. Number three guy just lost. He's number four guy had beat a guy way down. Number five guy just lost. He beat the number six guy. Asul Mabayev, he could be a new name, but he just doesn't have enough credit. So UFC 310 came and went. We'll see what happens after this, but it wasn't the best. Prelims were better than the main card. A lot of grappling on the main card. But you know what? Some fun wins here and there. We go 10-4 in predictions. That's not too bad, but that's all I got for the UFC 310 recap. I'm excited for UFC Tampa, Florida, coming at you next weekend. You get Colby Covington, Joaquin Buckley, Manel Cape, Bruno Silva, Vitor Petrino, Dustin Jacoby. Yeah, you get other fights too, guys. It's Colby Covington, Joaquin Buckley. That's why people are going to be tuning in. But thank you all for joining me. You know, I feel sick as a dog, but I'm still toughing it out. It's not easy to talk for an hour. Okay, it's not. I might bring a guest on or something so I don't have to talk as much. But thank you all so much for listening. I truly appreciate all the support. I love you all. And as always, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.